And now, here's your host, Alessandra Torrisani.
Christine Murray, I'm so thrilled to have you here all the way from North Carolina, which I am just crawling, trying to get to. It's so beautiful there. I went to my cousin's wedding in Asheville a few years ago there, but I am just dying to get onto that water. I am just like ready to enjoy it. I'm ready to live my Southern Charmed life. Do you just live a Southern Charmed life out there? I mean, I can only imagine.
I don't know. I'm originally from Pittsburgh, so I definitely do feel the culture difference between the North and the South, even still today, even though I've been here for a really long time. But North Carolina is a really great place to live, so you should definitely come on out for a visit sometime soon.
Oh, I'm going to do that. Well, I'm so excited to talk to you because the topic that we are going to get into that you specialize in, talking about domestic violence, talking about, you know, positive mental health, coping mechanisms, different strategies. These are all tools. Just a little background on me is I'm someone who lives with bipolar 1 disorder. So I'm very open about living with a mental illness, talking about it, making it as normal as I possibly can, with also treating it like it's kind of cool. Like I'm glad that I have this so I can have this opportunity to use this platform and discuss it. But, you know, something that I've been I very curious about learning about is when we talk about, you know, domestic violence and we talk about, you know, I'm a new mom and I hear just horror stories about mothers and about children and, you know, fathers as well, you know, people that live in these situations where it's just dire needs of just survival mode. And I want to have this episode, like we said earlier, of wanting it to be super conversational, but I would love for you, since this is your specialty, you know, to kind of teach my audience some key things about what we can do if, you know, we know someone that's in a domestic violent, you know, situation. If we are in, you know, one of those situations, you know, kind of just like a whole, you know, poo-poo platter, if you will, of things that we can do to try to make it a little bit light as much as we can, you know. But first, what I want to know is, Christine, how did you become involved in this? What drew you to such a really intense, life-changing topic that can just help so many people's lives?
Well, that's a great place to start. And thank you again for the opportunity to have this conversation with you today. I do want to say I really admire what you're doing and using your platform to raise awareness and break down some of the stigma surrounding mental health issues and relationship challenges. So I'm just thrilled to be here to have this conversation with you today. My interest in the topic of domestic violence, kind of similar, I think, to you, is both a professional pathway and personal. And so I am a marriage and family therapist, a licensed marriage and family therapist, and a licensed clinical mental health counselor by training. I have wanted to be a therapist for really since high school. And I really especially was drawn to the relational side of things. And so how to help people have healthy relationships, how to navigate different relationship challenges. It didn't really start with it in the kind of squarely in the area of domestic violence, but that was something that grew for me throughout my graduate school training and then my early years in my career. And one of the reasons for that was because when I first started to get out into doing clinical work, what I was noticing, I was not working in a domestic violence agency. But what I was seeing is working in an adult and even before that, a children's different outpatient mental health settings was I was just absolutely blown away by how many clients came in because of mental health concerns. Mm-hmm. But actually behind that, at least in my vantage point, was experiences of abuse. So especially I was seeing a lot of domestic violence when I was working with adult clients. But of course, a lot of people coming in seeking mental health treatment as adults, they may have had experiences and abuse of romantic relationships in adulthood, but also possibly childhood abuse, all different forms of abuse throughout different times of their life. Some people, of course, maybe had no experiences. Some people had multiple experiences, and some people may have had just one or more significant. But in my sort of first year of clinical work, truly the percentage was probably at least 85 to 90% of people. And that I say, you know, in my experience, so that might have been unusual, might have been the questions that I was asking. But it really just struck me, working with so many clients who are struggling with mental health concerns, how the seeds of those challenges with their mental health often could be kind of traced back to traumatic experiences that they had, untreated trauma, unresolved issues of trauma. And so right around that time was when I moved into a faculty position, and I've been on the faculty at UNC Greensboro since 2005, so 18 and a half years now.
Wow, amazing.
I know. And then I just really dove right in and just decided that I wanted, you know, I just felt so called to it. And I also, as I mentioned, have a personal experience. I also am a survivor of an abusive relationship as well, too. Oh. Haven't always spoken publicly about that and brought it into my work, but that's probably been a change in the past, actually about 4.5 to 5 years or so ago, that I also share that I have that lived experience too.
Well, I'll say, as someone who you know, lives with something, right? I always say that, you know, there is something that I'm not saying you have to have the same, you know, disorder that I do, or you have to, but I think there's something behind working with someone in a therapy standpoint or in a counseling standpoint who has some sort of lived experience, that it's not like this unknown. And I think I never really realized how important that was until I had a baby, where I'm like, oh, you don't have kids. You have no idea this feeling of postpartum anxiety that I'm going through, because it's so different than the normal anxiety that one would go through. Like, you know, there's higher stakes, I feel like. And I think that it's not saying that mine's better than yours, you know, by any means, but there is something about when I have a conversation. Right now I'm in the middle of doing neurofeedback therapy with someone. I've been working on this for a couple months now. And the girl that I've been working with that I relate to the most, and why I keep going back to her opposed to the other people that work there, is because she is a mom and she went through a very similar situation as me. And while the other people were just as qualified and they were great and I was learning a lot from them as well, there was something about me having a conversation with her where it brought out different emotions, different feelings, and a different sense of like normalizing what I was going through. So with you being so open and honest, well, that's not necessary by any means to make you an amazing, you know, therapist or specialist. It really, I'm sure, has helped so many people really feel a deeper bond and connection to you. I don't know, maybe that's just my own personal experience, but I think that's probably what people are feeling, honestly.
Yeah, I think I have I appreciate you saying that. I think it has been an interesting process for me, and almost to have the two different lenses where for a long period of time, I was a survivor, and I was just private about it. It wasn't that I wouldn't talk to anybody about it, but it just wasn't something that I brought publicly into my sort of professional identity. So I had a period of time where, you know, I was the researcher and the advocate and the person who worked in this field. And then I sort of, you know, opened up the curtain and said, well, actually I'm a survivor too. And it was a moment of a real inflection and reflection for me to think about doing that. We could probably have a whole conversation about that, about, you know, bringing that into your personal experience. And I think it's a very risky thing to do, to expose yourself.
Like with work, like, did you ever feel like, oh my gosh, they're not, I mean, that was my biggest fear of like, oh my gosh, if I talk about this, like I'm not, you know, going to get hired again, or I might get fired, you know, and that's something a lot of people come to me with.
Yeah, I think that certainly, I think that I had a lot of those normal worries and it's something that sometimes I talk about it, sometimes I just don't, but it's publicly, it's out in the public knowledge, for example. So sure. I did a local speaking event as my sort of first speaking back in October of 2019. I was invited to speak at a Domestic Violence Awareness Month, a Domestic Violence Awareness Month event. And I thought, this is my time. I don't know why, I just knew that it was, but I decided to do it. And then shortly after that, I was invited to give a TEDx Greensboro talk. And so that was like, okay, now I'm really putting this out there.
You're like, oh my gosh. I said, sure, I'll say a little bit. And then here I am doing a TEDx talk. Sure.
Yeah. So it was kind of, you know, steps in. Wow. But I think what I found, well, first of all, for years before that, one of my colleagues and I had been doing research related to the stigma surrounding domestic violence. And I've worked with a lot of survivors, even around sharing their stories. And I definitely had a strong conviction that you do not have to tell your story publicly to be a valid survivor, or, you know, in your case, a valid person who has experienced mental health challenges. Everybody is different, you know. So for some of us, we can shout it from the rooftops. For some of us, sure, we keep it private. I don't think there's so many reasons for that. It could be safety. It could be professional. Yeah. And so, you know, I think that I had really come to terms with that part. I sometimes in the back of my mind do think like, oh, I wonder if this person knows this about me or if not. But for me, I think it has been a real, overall, it's been a real blessing to have more of a personal connection. And what I find, and I'm sure you find this as well in talking about your experiences, that by being open about it, the floodgates open. You know, it's like, how many people, you know, right, experience all of these things, but we just don't talk about it. We don't, people more so nowadays talk about mental health. They talk about abusive relationships, but not normally average day-to-day conversation for most people, except for people like you and me.
Right, right. It's our forte. We're real good at it.
Yeah. Yeah, but it opens up the doors for so many other people to come and say, I also went through this, or my sister, my friend, my coworker, right, either sometimes they're saying, you know, can you help me? Help me. What do I do? How do I talk to this person? And then other times they're just like, oh yeah, this happened, or people will thank you for sharing your story. And so for me, I think if anything, it probably initially increased my feelings of maybe stigma or fears about what people might say. And I think there's always a risk that somebody could say or do something.
With anything.
Yeah, with anything. Yeah. But more than anything, I think it's been, for me, a really beautiful thing because it's just makes it easier to be real and for people to approach you. I guess I'm not thinking so much necessarily about, you know, clients or populations, but just people, just in general in the world, you know, people go through hard times and we sort of act like it maybe doesn't happen as often as we think it does, but it really does. So I think having people who share their stories is important, but of course not everybody has to do that.
Right. Or, you know, I always say, you know, when you're confident and you know it's your time to speak about your story, wow, you can change someone's entire life that you didn't even know by sharing your story. But you have to be so ready for that, because the first time I started talking about it, it was like people kept coming to me and I was like, whoa, I'm not a specialist. I'm not a therapist. I'm just sharing my lived experience. And it can be very dangerous if you hear so many people's stories where it's overwhelming. Maybe it triggers another emotion in you that you weren't ready for. So you truly have to be confident in yourself and in your story, and that you're like, this is my moment. I'm ready for this. I'm ready to take on whatever comes to me, and then go from there, you know. But truly, like you said, you have to be ready. You know, I guess a question that I always have with in regards to the topic of domestic violence is, so many people, when they're in the midst of it, right, they normalize it. They're like, it's fine. It's not going to happen again. Or it's, you know, that seems to be a narrative that I hear a lot from personal experiences of people around me, of like, well, this happened once, but they said that they're going to change and it's not going to happen again. And I've had personal experiences with abusive relationships. It's never gotten to a point where it was like so physical or so, it was mentally, trust me, there, but the physicality, but I've seen physical altercations with people. At what point is it a moment for someone from the outside where they can step in, right? Because you never want to cross a boundary. You never want to be like, I don't want to be the one that takes this relationship away. What is something that, like, advice-wise from a specialist, you know, like you, that help with those who are seeing it happen from an outsider's point of view, what they can do to help?
Well, it's a very frustrating situation to be in when you are watching somebody that you care about that's in a relationship that is unhealthy or potentially unsafe. And it's not easy. And I think the first thing we sort of have to do when we're on the outside of that situation is just remember that we are on the outside. And so we're seeing things differently than how they feel, how they look on the inside. Right. And we kind of have to take really good care of ourselves in those situations too, because most of the time these relationships can go on for some time. And you kind of have to equip yourself to navigate that, because if you care about a person or you're personally affected by it, let's say it's the person you sit next to in your office at work, maybe you're not the best of friends, but you're hearing it going on, or you're afraid for your safety. What if their abuser comes in and does something in the workplace? So, you know, I think a first place is just to really try to get some support for yourself in that situation. If you do not know a lot about the dynamics of abusive relationships, it's always helpful to learn more, gain more awareness. We can talk a little bit about some of those dynamics if you think it would be helpful. And also really kind of think about how do you want to approach the situation and honoring the person's choices. There are some cases where maybe legally you actually have to step in. So if a child is being abused or being a witness to it, and that's something that would be reportable. So sometimes you actually do have to intervene in a different way, or if you are, you know, just really afraid for this person's safety or your own safety in a situation. But a lot of times, of course, just as you said, the challenge is being there for the person that you care about while also letting them make their own decisions. And sometimes you don't agree with those decisions. So, you know, I think in those cases, it's really important to be really clear that you do not judge the person, that you can express what you want to say to them in a very non-judgmental, caring, supportive tone. So for example, you could say something like, I'm concerned about your safety, or I've noticed some things about that relationship that are raising some red flags for me. And I just wondered if we could talk about it.
Oh, I love that. Yeah.
How different is that than, like, you've got to get out. You got to get away from this person, or this person is so bad for you.
I love that way of putting things. Yes. Okay.
One thing that I was going to mention was that one of the very first clients that I worked with that was in a very serious domestic violence situation. One of the more serious ones I've heard about, actually, even at this point in my career. Wow. And she had come in for counseling, and she said, I've met with other professionals. They tell me that I have to leave him. I don't want to do that. If you tell me that, I'm not coming back to meet with you either. So I had to learn in that situation, okay, you know, I can look at this situation and see what a dangerous situation this client is in, but it's not going to do anybody any good if I lead with that. You know, like, this isn't healthy. Right. Get out. You want to be like, get out. It's not safe. And I've had that situation with people in my personal life too, where you just look and you're like, get out of here. Get out of there. It's not good for you. But you have to, that situation was a really valuable learning experience for me was, and I think I've lived this piece too, is just like you said, it's not always 100% clear cut, right? Mm-hmm. So in that relationship, it's hard for us on the outside to look at somebody who has a partner who's maybe extremely abusive or moderately or mildly abusive, let's say, and say, how do they like that person, let alone love them? But chances are there's some level of positive affection toward the person. It's possible there's not, and maybe they're completely afraid of their partner. They're afraid to leave. It might just be that there are some real barriers. Maybe they don't have money. Maybe there's children in common that we have to sort of trust for people that the decision that they're making is what is right for them in that moment. And maybe we don't really feel that way, but we kind of have to let the process play out and be there to offer support. But, and I'll kind of pause because I think I'm getting to the point of rambling a little bit, but
no,
also to the point where we don't want to sacrifice our own well-being. So it doesn't necessarily mean you can't have any boundaries or set any limitations on the help. And you might say, I have done what I can in this situation. And for right now, I am going to need to take a step back as your friend because I don't agree with what's happening, or I'm too concerned for you. I'm losing too much sleep for my own sake. I'm taking care of myself. I'm here, you know, if you need me, if that's true. But I think it's a real, that's why I kind of started by saying, I think it's a real balancing act between having that concern for your loved one and really being ready to take good care of yourself in the process because it's hard.
I think the boundary thing that you say, like talking about boundaries, I think boundaries are so important. It's something I constantly am learning more and more about. And setting those boundaries, I think especially as a mom, I've now set a lot of boundaries that I never would have thought I ever would have done. But I think that's great, is making sure you have the boundaries for yourself. But something that you said that really like hits home is like, yes, when there's kids involved, you know, sometimes you sacrifice a whole lot of stuff because you're like, well, you know, you just want your kid to be happy, or you don't want to, you know, lose custody of your kid, or you don't want to not be able to see your kid in divorces. So I feel like I see that all the time now. And I never realized the importance of it. You know, I'm a child of divorce, but I'm like, I never saw the importance of, wow, some people stay together just for the kids. You know, you hear that a lot, but you never really hear that, if that makes sense, you know? So if we're talking about the kids, you know, what are some things that we can do to create healthy relationships, healthy boundaries, just setting a good tone for our children without it being just like everything's perfect all the time, if we are in a situation where it's not, you know, squeaky clean, let's say.
Mm-hmm. And I think the same could be true whether you're talking about the home where the parents are together and there is conflict or there are challenges in the relationship, or post separation, let's say. And, you know, because the one thing I think, especially when there are children shared in common, is often the abusive dynamics don't stop. We've heard this from so many. I've done a lot of different research studies with survivors of past abuse and also through community work that, you know, the custody situations, trying to co-parent alongside a
parent is talking very badly about the other parent to the child, and then the child internalizes it. Yes, I know. Because I mean, even though I'm a family of divorce, my mother never spoke one ill word to this day about my father. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And I think that was so important because it set a tone, you know, and I think that's so important for parents. It makes me cringe when they talk so badly about the other parent to their child. Like, it's like, oh my God, please stop, please stop, please stop. You know, they're internalizing it because they're half of that other parent, you know? I mean, so sorry, that's my ramble.
Well, I think you raised some really good points. And I think that if you are somebody who has experienced an abusive relationship and you find yourself co-parenting, whether together or apart from the person who was abusive towards you, I think that it's probably not going to be easy. I do think, just like you shared with the example with your mother, who she probably, I would speculate, you know, as someone in that situation is probably being very intentional about that. That was probably a decision, you know, that she made a long time ago. And she said, I'm not going to do this. And I think that's what you have to do in that situation, or what most people would probably find themselves needing to do, because the truth is you cannot control what somebody else does. And you can look at what an abusive partner slash ex-partner might do, and like, why can't they just cooperate? Why can't they just stop these abusive words, actions, behaviors, whatnot? But we can, you know, sort of control what we can do in that situation. And so I think what we have to do in those situations is sort of look at, okay, what are the boundaries that I can set? Both boundaries and how you relate to other people, but then also boundaries for yourself too. So like saying, no matter what, I'm not going to speak negatively about the other parent to my children, or I'm not going to curse at them. I'm not going to yell at them. I could get real. I'm not going to write a nasty email back to them. I'm not going to get sucked into it. It's very, very hard to do that. But you know, I think that having sort of guidelines and then setting in place, okay, what are you going to do when you get that nasty email slash text message slash phone call? Okay, I'm going to read it. I'm going to call my therapist, my friend, write in my journal, take a walk, call my mom, whatever I have to do. Yeah. You know, if you're in that situation, what am I going to do in this situation to kind of work through what I want to do and what I want to say, which is, you know, X, Y, and Z. And
which is a lot.
Yeah. And then come back and say, okay, well, this is what my commitment is to myself. And this is how I'm going to carry myself in this situation. Right. I do think, though, it is important to say that sometimes these situations are unsafe. And so for some parents, if there are real safety risks, I think that you would be wise to speak with law enforcement, a lawyer, whether it's looking into whether a protective order, or sometimes there's supervised visitation or custody exchanges being done at public places. So there are some. If we're talking about a situation where there are some safety risks like that, I think that we don't want to minimize that too, because sometimes it is lack of cooperation and verbal abuse, which can be very distressing. But sometimes there are real risks,
and each story is its own unique thing. Yes, exactly, and they're own unique things, so you cannot, you know, put that in. You know, something that I remember reading, and now I'm like, oh, that's what I wanted to ask you about, was you talked about you do the Healthy Relationships Initiative. So since we've been talking about unhealthy relationships, let's talk about the healthy relationships of this initiative that you've started. What is this initiative, and how can we put that towards our everyday life?
Mm-hmm. Well, so part of my work at the university has been developing and implementing this Healthy Relationships Initiative. It was a change of course, because like I said, much of my work was kind of downstream looking at unhealthy, unsafe relationships.
Sure.
But we had an opportunity. This was actually... But first, we first started planning with the Phillips Foundation, which is a local family foundation here in our community, to do this upstream initiative in 2015, and it launched in 2017.
Amazing.
Yeah, so the goal really was, they really, through their philanthropic efforts with that foundation, recognized that that was a missing piece, that we've got resources for mental health concerns, we've got resources for domestic violence services, but how do we address the more upstream positive so that maybe we can... I think obviously the goal long term would be to prevent future violence, abuse, future mental health challenges that can be related to unhealthy and unsafe relationships. So we've been working on it. It's kind of gone through some different iterations, of course, since 2017. But we do a lot of online outreach. We used to do a lot more, especially before COVID, in-person outreach, promoting happy, healthy, and safe relationships of all kinds. And so just real briefly, we define that happy, healthy, safe as part of our mission, but it's also how we can look at defining the quality of relationships. And so we look at safety as really the foundation for healthy relationships. And that is essentially where it pulls in this idea of being free from violence and abuse. So you can't have a healthy relationship when there's a lack of safety, when there's not safety, when abuse is happening, when neglect is happening. And then we can talk about healthy relationships. These are some of the really core qualities of healthy positive relationships like trust, good communication, able to navigate conflict, some shared values, you know, that sort of thing, where it's a sense of real health and kind of well-being in relationships. And then happy relationships, that's really the ultimate, you know, the peak yeah. of relationship functioning, and where of relationships of all kinds. It could be in parenting, it could be in romantic relationships, friendships, workplaces, all different kinds of relationships. It's just sort of this optimal functioning in relationships. So I think that, you know, we can, I think it's helpful to look at abusive relationships even as sort of part of that continuum, because we're talking yeah. in that case, like down, you know, down at the bottom, right? The kind of lowest quality is abusive relationships. But even people who have a history of abusive relationships can establish healthy, safe relationships, maybe 100%. Not with a person that was abusive toward them, but that people can move on and have that healthy relationships.
It doesn't have to be a repetitive cycle. You know, it doesn't have to be the same thing over and over.
And if you think about it, most of us don't really learn a lot about healthy relationships. It's something we take for granted. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I don't really remember learning much. I think I'm a little older than you, but I don't remember really talking about healthy relationships. We had like sex ed in high school, but that's all we had.
Yeah.
Healthy relationships. And, you know, nowadays I think people are talking about it more, but, you know, talk about as a parent, something you can do to help your children is to help them learn about healthy relationships, how to navigate conflict. What do you do if a friend at school starts bullying you or picking on you and you don't feel safe? How can you sort of navigate that too? So I think that we can do a lot more, not just through the Healthy Relationships Initiative, but to help people know what does a healthy relationship look like? Because the truth is, most of us think we know what that is, but it's hard in the real world to know.
No, mm-hmm. I mean, you literally are bringing up such an important topic of, you know, I'm even thinking like to myself right now when you're like, what do they do? You know, they're bullying. And I'm like, oh my God, what do you do? Like, oh my gosh, like I'm like thinking about this as my mom is in the other room with my daughter. I'm like, what am I going to do? But it's so true, because I feel like I grew up in a very, super blessed, like privileged. I feel like very lucky. I was nurtured. I was loved. I was guided to do whatever I wanted to do. Like it was beautiful. But I feel like now I look at, there's just so much unhealthiness in the world that it's not even just about what my personal thing was like with my parents. I'm 36. Like it's a very different generation than it was when I was younger, you know? And for me to have I say a newborn, she's not a newborn, but she is my newborn. So for me to have a young baby right now, it's very scary. And like, you know, for instance, I'm like touring preschools and, you know, all these different things. And it's so scary because, yeah, I think that we have a little bit more knowledge about mental health, a little bit more knowledge on you shouldn't be bullying and stuff. But I mean, let me just use the example. I was in the park with my 19-month-old, and someone asked what her name was. And I said, oh, her name is Lady. And this little 3-year-old starts laughing, goes, what kind of name is that? And I'm just like, oh, and like the mom in me was like, I'm going to get you. But I was like, okay, that's a 3-year-old, Alessandra. You need to calm down right now. But I know it's inevitable. And I know that those situations are going to happen. So like, for instance, like, what do you do if you're kid is getting bullied? Like, what would be the best way for me to say to Lady, like, hey, let's create a healthy relationship and like a boundary? Like, what would your advice be?
Yeah. Well, I don't think I shared this before, but I'm also a mom. My children are definitely not newborns. I've got 2 teenage sons. Let me tell you, it really doesn't.
Still your newborns.
Oh, well, in my mind, but definitely don't tell them that. Yeah. They would be like, get off my back, mom. You're touring preschools. I'm starting to tour colleges. So, you know, it all happens really quickly, but you know, it is a very different world right now. And I think even if you lay that foundation of healthy relationships, there are just some things that as a parent in today's world are like, okay, what do we do about this? Because Snapchat, you know, for example, it just disappears. I have no idea what they're talking about, what they're doing, if it's healthy. You know, and so I think for me, one of the things that I've tried to do is, one, I'm not perfect, okay? I have moments where I would be highly embarrassed if you were watching me as somebody who is a therapist or someone who talks about healthy relationships. If you had a camera in my house at certain moments, you'd be like, oh boy,
but you're a real person. That's why. You know, we're all real.
Show me somebody who's a perfect parent. And I just think they probably aren't heavily involved in their parenting. So it's hard. You know, it's very, very hard. But, you know, one, I do try to model healthy behaviors for my children. One of the hardest things, but I think one of the most important things that I try to do as a parent, again, I'm going to say just all of it, just big disclaimer, I am not at all perfect, and I could critique probably every day worth of parenting for my whole children's lives. My oldest son is almost 17, so it's been a while, but I try to apologize to them, you know, and boy, I do not want to apologize to teenagers, because chances are they're not really going to reciprocate. They're not really going to appreciate it. But I want to show them, you know, I can apologize to you. Mom makes mistakes, and I can show you that I can work on correcting that. That's been something that's been important. Since they were young, I tried to teach them about apologizing and accepting responsibility. I hope I can remember it now because I haven't used this for a while with my kids, but I used to call it like a four-part apology. Like, I'm sorry. This is what I did, owning up to it. It was wrong because, and then what am I going to work on to address this?
Wow.
Right?
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, I think, you know, it was good. I don't know if they do it anymore. I'd have to ask them if they even remember that. I don't remember where I learned it, but it was to try to help them to see that you can work on things, you can own up to what you've done. And I think actually as a parent in today's world, you probably would be wise to be prepared both for what to do if your child is experiencing mistreatment at the hands of another person, and what if you find out if your child is the one that is saying or doing things that are harmful behavior. Yeah.
You never know. Yeah.
Yeah. But I think it is important to talk with them about healthy versus unhealthy words, behaviors, help them to recognize. I do think the older that kids get, the more important it is to not just tell them like, well, that's not healthy, but to say, well, what did you learn from that relationship? Like, as they start dating, I mean, don't even start to think about this. Obviously, you've got a toddler. Or if some, let's say, even in kindergarten, let's say, one time, one of my children was in a friendship, which was somebody who was a really close friend, and they started to kind of pick on them and tease them. And we just said, you know, it's probably a good idea if you take a step back from that friendship for right now. They eventually came back around because, you know, they're young, kids are still learning, there's peer pressure, things like that. So just helping them to learn to navigate those relationships, I think helping them to think through those things on their own as much as possible in a developmentally appropriate way. And then I do think there is something to be said for helping children learn from as early as possible about having boundaries with other people. So I think a good example at the age that your daughter is would be, for example, if she doesn't want to hug a family member, that's her body, you know, what's your choice? Would you, for example, does she feel comfortable giving a fist bump or just a wave from across room versus, you know, I think the older way of thinking about things in past generations was if your older family members coming in for a hug, you have no choice but to go for it. And you may just be like, oh, I don't want that. And it's kind of teaching you not to have those boundaries. So I think it's little things, thinking for yourself as a parent, you know, what is important to you? What do you want to model? How can you kind of help your child learn and navigate that? Sure. And I think the more you do it, actually, at the age that you're starting as young as the age that your daughter is and kind of just having that foundation, you're not going to find yourself with a teenager and you've never had these conversations in the past.
Right. Right. Like, she loves to blow a kiss to people. So I'm like, all right, go for it. Like, you know, that's who you are. Like, go for it. Like, she loves to give hugs. So I'm like, that's go sweet. For it. But it's something that I'm very conscious and very aware of. Another thing I think I'm aware of is, you know, the narrative of this was not from my mom, but this was like from everyone growing up. You know, if boy, you know, pushed you on the, you know, the field or in the park or something, it was like, oh, they liked you. It's like, no, they were just an asshole. Like, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Like, you know, and I don't know where that narrative ever came from, like from way back in the day, but I don't think that that's right to be like, oh, that's okay that they did that. Like, no, it's not okay that they did that and they should apologize. And I think it's also about surround. Obviously, you can't be in control of who your kids go to school with. Like, you can't be in control of that. But I would say the core group that I hang out with, the kids, the parents are so, they're not helicopter parents by any means, but they're so attentive in a very good way of like, hey, you know, if lady doesn't want a hug right now, you have to ask her permission if you can, you know, give her a hug, or ask her permission if you can, you know, touch her, you know, hand and hold her hand on, you know, the slide. You know, they're very good about that. And I've learned so much from the moms and dads that I've surrounded myself with on how to act. It's really like remarkable, because I'm like, okay, I guess so, you know, but I'm like, yeah, that is important, like to ask someone, because a lot of kids don't like to be touched. And I learned that. I have relatives who are on the spectrum, and they don't like hugs. Like they can't have a hug. Like they physically can't do it. They don't want that. Mm-hmm. And that's not me. I'm a touchy-feely person. I'm always grabbing someone, you know, all the stuff. That sounded bad, but you know what I mean? Like, I'm just like very, like,
I know, you know,
I like to like holding hands. I'm very, you know, affectionate, you know, and I had to learn, wow, not everybody likes that. And not everyone can handle that, like emotionally. So, you know, you're right. It's about having the conversations from very young on, and it's never too late to have a conversation with a kid or a relative or a friend, you know, like that, and be like, hey, this just, I don't really like when you do this. Like, I think it's okay to do that. And I think people will honor and love you even more for being open and honest. You know,
right.
I really do. I think people are more receptive than we think, and we give them credit for.
And if they're not, then we can have that conversation about, okay, do you want to be, let someone close to you who isn't respectful of the boundaries that you have, and thinking about that. And so I think the relationships that you bring into your own life, and the relationships, whether it's friendships, romantic relationship, family relationships that your child sees. Another, as an actress, you might appreciate, I think talking about things that you see on TV, in the media, is really, especially as kids get older in those teen years where they may not want to talk about their own life so much, but you can get a conversation going about that, you know, celebrity couple or what happened in a movie or something that you saw.
Sure.
Like, it's just an entry point into having conversations. And sometimes it's a little bit less threatening.
Because it's not about you.
Right. Yeah. You can look at it and think, well, what did you think about that? Was that healthy? Was it unhealthy? Would you want to be in a relationship like that? You know, that sort of thing. And I think that just making that as much of a part of the conversations, and it does, I think, sometimes get a little bit, I mean, it's certainly, I'm not going to lie, two teenage boys in my house right now. You got a lot going on. You got to wait for the windows of like, okay, we can have a conversation right now. But I will say, you know, because and of course, this is kind of my line of work, but, you know, having these conversations over the course of their whole lives, by now, if I said, okay, well, how are your friends' mental health? Do you have any friends that your relationships you're concerned about? Or, you know, what do you think you can learn? These, at least in my house with me, and they know my work, and we just have these conversations all the time. It's not unusual if I bring that up. And I think that if you're used to just talking sports or, you know, clothes or whatever, and then it's like you try to open the door, you know, it's never too late. I certainly agree, but you can definitely help to set the stage as much as possible early on. And I do think, kind of going back to what we started talking about in the beginning, is sharing your own personal experiences and struggles too. I think kids right. have a hard time opening up if it's like, wow, mom is just perfect. She has yeah. everything figured out. You yeah. know, she would never understand because everything is just great in her world. And so to say, you know, I've got a friendship where I've struggled too with kind of how my friend was treating me or, you know, or what I remember when I was dating, or I remember when I was struggling when I was in middle school and people were picking on me too. You know, I think whatever the scenario, I'm just kind of making up some examples here, but
no, but it's
you
know, true.
I think that the for adults who are in the life, it doesn't just have to be parents too. I mean, I think often it's other adults like grandparents, neighbors, coaches who can have a lot of those opportunities that, you know, yeah. just letting them know, like, I'm just kind of, you don't want them to think you're totally confused about what you're doing. You know, you want to yeah. convey to your kids that they can be confident in you as a parent. But I do think it's helpful for them to know that you're human. You're on the journey too. You're maybe a little farther along and you're there to help them. But it goes a long way.
I think some of the best advice I ever got when I became a parent was, you know, obviously you don't remember what it was like when you were 6 months old, but they, you know, said to me, they were like, remember how you felt at that age. Remember how you felt in that situation. Remember how you felt at the park. Remember how you felt in school or with your parents, like whatever that is, and give grace and just be kind and be open. And you're right. Sharing your personal experience of like, guess what? Mom is not perfect. And it's not going to be a perfect, you know, family, you know, in whatever situation it is. But what is perfect? There is no such thing as perfect. Mm-hmm. And letting your kid know that there is no such thing as perfect, you right. know, and that we're just all humans and we're just trying to get through the day and be the best versions of ourselves and just be kind, you know, open individuals. And that's all we can do. So, oh, Christine, this has been such a great conversation. I'm so happy that I had you on and that we had this conversation right now and opened up about some really tough subjects. What is is there a website or is there somewhere that someone can go if they are living with domestic abuse, if they know someone? What are some key things that we can point into, key places we can point into the audience?
Well, I would say, for starters, if someone is in or knows somebody in a crisis situation, it's important to know what the crisis resources are in your community, as well as the National Domestic Violence Hotline is a wonderful resource that's always available. Personally, I'm getting ready to launch my newest resource, which is called the Source for Survivors. So it's at sourceforsurvivors.info. And what that is really bringing in a lot of lessons learned through my work and my personal experience. Experiences with a focus on the long-term journey of healing and recovering from past abuse. So we'll be sharing a lot of online resources there too. And through there, you'd be able to sort of connect with other different resources. But I do think the kind of the big takeaway that I would just hope people have from our conversation too is, first of all, just kind of for both of us, hopefully people appreciated just openness and, you know, that nobody's perfect and that you can kind of be open about your own experiences if and when you feel comfortable. But also for those who have experienced abuse in their lives, I think it's just important always for people to know that you can heal from that. You're not alone. And there are steps that you can take toward a brighter future for yourself. And since you have a lot of your audience who are parents, for your children too. And healing is just such an important process and it's possible. So I think it's always important to end with that message.
Oh, I love that. Christine, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. And I'm going to have all those numbers and all the information. I'll put it at the bottom in the show notes. So for those who are listening, you just click on the episode, you know, information and all this stuff will be there. And I'll also put it on the website. Thank you so much, Christine.